Hey folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff podcast. We are now live, so no one can say fuck anymore. There you go. We are blessed with two professionals from DC Comics who are here to talk about the Endless Winter event coming up this December. Directly beneath me in the Brady Bunch grid is Andy Lanning, comics legend. How you doing, sir?
Very well, thank you. Nice to be here. Appreciate you inviting us on board.
Yeah, it's an impressive man cave you have there, sir.
Thank you. It doubles as the inner mind of a 10-year-old, but yeah, it's
nice. And before I introduce our panel of thousands, over there in the far corner of the Brady Bunch grid is Ron Mars, also a comic legend. How you doing, sir?
I think I'm in the Greg Brady slot, am I not? I am well, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
I guess that would make Paul Malkow next to you in the is that the Alice slot?
I'm Jan.
And Paul is the editor of Union City. Well, hang on. Is your company Union City Heroes, or is that your game?
Yeah, we're Union City Heroes overall.
All right, cool. Good to have you, sir. Directly above you is Jacob Blackman. Hey, Jacob.
Hello.
I'm glad to see you growing the beard out again. It looks very nice.
Just not growing, just not shaving.
And band. Directly above Ron and next to Jacob.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. Last introduction. I know there's a bunch of them. Christopher McLaughlin, Ghost Show Press, the man who hides his face, is here as well. How you doing, Chris?
Well, the thing is, my webcam is government issued. So need I say more?
It's rough being a public educator. I understand.
Yeah, I did try to misuse government equipment and get on here, especially since my bulldog came down for the podcast. And I'm thinking, hey, we could get a Harkins Raiders plug and talk about Alfie. But yeah, I'm limited to the occasional slurp and chew in the background because she has a chew stick right now.
2021, we'll get down there.
All right.
Well, hey, so let's set this up. Ron, would you do the honors of telling us what Endless Winter is all about, giving us the elevator pitch while I scroll through some of this beautiful promotional art?
Endless Winter is a 9-part DC Comics crossover that will run through the Justice League family of books in December. Every week in December. I think December is a 5-week month this year. So you will get Endless Winter goodness every week in December. It is written in every part by myself and the lovely and talented Andy Lanning, and drawn by a host of artistic superstars. I think we've got a different artist on every issue. So part of our job in this thing is to juggle all of the artists and the deadlines and all of that stuff. But it's not our first rodeo doing a big crossover. So it's been a ball so far. It is, it's a story of the aforementioned Endless Winter descending on the world and unleashed by a new character called the Frost King, who you see right there, rather frosty and demonic looking. So the story is about a winter event that covers the planet, and you guys might have heard that there's a bit of climate change going on in the world right now. I know we don't hear much about it in the news, but so the story kind of reflects some of that, reflects some of our pandemic reality where we're all sort of isolated from each other. So those are sort of subtle bits that we've got in there. But first and foremost, it's a story about superheroes, you know, beating on ice monsters.
Someone has a message.
I'm getting away from it. That's my artist. I'm also trying to coordinate artists and get deadlines done. But I promise I just closed it. All
right. Well, hey, this sounds like a really cool thing. I'm searching for questions. I guess I was kind of hoping for Kyle Rayner, given your past history with Green Lantern. But go ahead.
We have a Green Lantern, but it is not Kyle Rayner. It's John Stewart in this one, and John is actually kind of one of the pivotal characters in the story to some extent because he doesn't have his own book right now. So we've got a little bit more latitude to play with him than than one of the characters that might have their own solo title. So John's really the star of the Justice League issue that kind of takes place in the middle of the whole thing.
So the cool thing with when you get to do one of these big event books is ideally, and the format of this one was really cool because we get an Endless Winter number one double size sort of issue and an Endless Winter number two double size issue as bookend the entire run. In between that, you have the seven issues of the titles that are running through the story. So,
Andy, tell us those titles.
Okay, it is in order: Flash, Superman, Aquaman, Teen Titans, Justice League Dark, which yep, we were, and a Black Adam special. Yeah. I've missed one. Oh, damn. Justice League. Go back.
You've heard of Justice League.
Yes, I'm sure we've heard of the Justice League.
Yes. Black Adam cover is compelling.
I was doing so well until I opened my mouth.
It's okay. We brought it back for reshoots. That's
yeah. Can you edit that to make me look charming again?
We'll fix it in post.
Ron, will you stop talking over me?
Oh,
little bit of politics. Okay. the good thing with this is you come up with like a huge event. You know, it's kind of in the title of this sort of book. So with this one, you know, a winter that blankets the entire planet. And then, you know, we tell that story. The meat and potatoes of that story is in those bookend issues. And then what you get through the individual issues along the way is how do those characters in that story in that book react to the whole world going to shit around them? And that's what makes these great fun, because we get to sort of like enter that continuity, that character, and examine, you know, this bigger event through their eyes. So the Teen Titans book has got a completely different flavor than the Superman book. The Aquaman book is a great Aquaman family adventure, which we had a hoot writing. And Justice League Dark, which for me is one of my favorite books I read at the moment. I think Ram and James have done a brilliant job with that. Is very much in keeping with that book, and so it's both the challenge and the joy of writing something like this, and then you know, also the kind of like, you know, juggling you know, axes whilst you're unicycling across a flaming canyon is we're also feeding the bigger story moves along during those as well. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and as you can tell from some of the imagery that's coming out from it is great, just really, really stunning.
That's gonna be such a huge fun challenge to both tell your own big story and have your own big event, but also have it feed into the larger continuity that is going on.
Mm-hmm. That's been really rewarding though. Yeah. Editorially in DC, you know, they're really receptive and they've really helped us because basically we didn't want to go in and blow things up, particularly for the writing. We were following up, you know, yeah, we kill everyone. Okay, here you go. we've destroyed the DC universe. And over to you.
Again.
Exactly.
I'm loving about the look of this. It is a huge danger, you know, obviously with the concept of climate change in mind. But you know, how is it going to react in the DC universe without utterly changing the DC universe? Yeah, I love big stories like this where you're not dealing with let's blow up, you know, Star City.
Yeah, It's its own story. I mean, you know, and through the magic and smoke and mirrors of comic book continuity, it's like, you know, this is its own thing. But that's again, you know, it's like you go into these stories. You know, there's whatever, Batman's appearing in 7 books this month. You know, that guy's busy. You know, do you know what I mean? I'm looking at, you know, my Google calendar, and it, you know, it's like his Bat Google calendar must be a mess.
There's 3 Jokers, so there's like 5 Batman. Hey, is this an Easter egg? Is this New York license plate say New 52?
It actually might, and you're honest. Like, obviously, we've seen these covers for quite a while. I had never noticed that before.
No, that's good though. I like that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, apparently a little Easter egg, but it, you know that. You know, it was a disparate batch of books that they handed us that were available to be part of this crossover. So, you know, we tried to make sure that everything retained its own personality. It didn't become too sublimated to the overall storyline. The Teen Titans issue is a Teen Titans issue. The Justice League Dark issue is a Justice League Dark issue with, you know, complete with, you know, summoning of spirits and a detective who happens to be a chimp.
Now, are you guys writing those crossovers, or are you the architects who are working with the writers on those individual crossover issues?
No, we did the whole thing.
Damn, awesome.
For good or ill, we wrote everything.
Yeah, I opened up the DC solicitations and it was like, wow, Ron Mars and Andy Lanning are writing everything this month. I may have to take back some of the bad things I've said about 2020. I think you've redeemed a lot of the year with what you're doing in December there.
Hold on, Chris. Let's wait and see how the story ends. Oh, yeah.
Jake, good point. Let's regroup on January 1st. and you can be like, 2020 ended in the same sort of shitstorm it started in.
Right? You guys just ended Endless Winter with like, and then everybody in the DC universe dies. That's, you know.
There's an end to Endless Winter.
Well, speaking of this story, I'm very curious. Well, now you've indicated that a lot of this is coming out of current events, but I'm curious how it evolved. I mean, did it start out this big, or did you get a germ of an idea and then it's sort of, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we added this? You know, could you tell us a little bit about your process on this one?
Yeah.
It started with Andy, really. It was his nugget of an idea, and then he lured me in like the siren that he is.
It was like there was no way I was going to take the blame for everything on myself. So Alex Carr is the group editor of the Justice League titles, the family of books that, you know, which we're dealing with here, contacted me to say, you know, we're doing an event book, and I'm big, you know, big fan of. I believe it was like the Annihilation stuff was what he was particularly referencing back in the day,
which is terrific.
Thank you very much. And it was like, okay, great. So, you know, what do you want to do? And he's like, well, we want something that's, you know, all of the parameters we've just discussed, self-contained, that runs through the title. And so it's like, it's a Christmas, event. I wanted to have, and the starting point for all stories, and I think this is the same with you, Ron, you can, you know, confirm or deny this, is like, you want to write something that you want to read yourself. Do you know what I mean? You write for yourself. And I love this type of event book. And so it had to be set in Christmas. It was like, it's like a, you know, I've been saying jokingly, but in fact, I really mean it. It's like, you know, when it gets cold, dark and shitty outside, what better sit down with a good comic book, you know, a cup of cocoa and some marshmallows, and, you know, and you know, breeze through a big story that actually has an end to it. You know, it's like it actually finishes, even though it's called The Endless Winter. Oh, we could get sued.
There's a lot to be said for that. In the comics medium, where it is too often, and I don't want to necessarily bring this all on editorial, but it's too often that we see the end of, especially these big events, where they don't have a proper ending, where they have this to be continued. Well, this is this is just a catalyst that will lead off to all these other effects. And of course, any story wants to have a presence or an impact that affects future stories, but all too often that becomes sublimated to what should be the end of a story. When you pick up a book, you want to have a beginning, middle, and end. And so it's awesome to anticipate that this is going to have that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, this definitely has, you know, this has a beginning, a middle, and an end. You can come in and just read these books that month. And, you know, there are no stray threads. There are no, odd cross. There are no red skies, right? It doesn't sprawl too far. We wanted to keep it fairly contained in the Justice League family, and sort of the tertiary books that are around it. And kind of get in, get out, and tell a story someday we'll make a nice, hopefully hardcover collection.
Sure.
And that's one of the things DC do brilliantly, by the way, is those lovely collections. So please, please, please. But also the other thing is writing through all of those titles as well, is we are playing with ongoing continuity. So, you know, it's like we're not suddenly writing characters. We're picking up where things left off, and we're hopefully teeing things up that we'll tease out for next year. Okay, so there'll be, you know, it's not so isolated it has no meaning to it. Everything still is progressing and slotting into ongoing continuity. It's just that particular story does resolve itself. So and so basically, going back to the genesis of it all, was what's really cool? Let's do something that's very winter. You know, it's like let's do something that's about snow and ice. And my mind went to things like, you know, Nordic legends, Scandinavian legends, the legend of the Frost Witch, the Hans Christian Andersen story and things like right. that. And visually, I thought that's really interesting, because one of the things Alex did say, he said, can we steer clear of sort of demonic imagery and stuff like that because of all the heavy metal, death metal, black metal stuff that's going on at the moment. Right. And you know, this is kind of like the antithesis of that. Stylistically, because it's all white, clear, glowing, right. and if you think about it, the fantasy element of Norse and Scandinavian mythology is very distinctive as well, which is, you know, it's not ostensibly, you know, demonic in the way that say the Batman crossover stuff is at the moment. So and so juggling all of that around, I pretty very quickly realized, you know, the scope of what we were doing across the way, and just pinged Ron, because Ron and I have been working together prior to this, when I've sort of been on a kind of a hiatus from writing comics for the last, I guess, 6 or 7 years. I was working at a tech startup called Magic Leap, who were doing augmented reality glasses. Where I went into that job thinking I was going to be writing comic books and creating characters, ended up working as the creative director, working with the Royal Shakespeare Company on creating holographic Shakespearean performances. So
that took
a bit of a left turn. but what was brilliant about it is Ron was working with me on some comics that we did actually end up writing. So and I know that Ron's got a great, you know, CV when it comes to this sort of big scope storytelling. So from that point onwards, I went to Ron and said, okay, this is it. I've got this general idea, Norse mythology. I've sort of, it's like the Frost Witch, the Snow Queen and stuff like that, but it, you know, blah, 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 blah. And we started spitballing. And again, that's part of the joyous fun of doing the job we do, is we get to go, what if, you know, and then Ron will go, that's good, but I take that and I'll raise you this. And then, you know, and then we go to the DC editors, and what's been brilliant is they go, oh, that's all good stuff. Have you thought about this? And we go, no, thank you very much.
can I ask, So you've talked about two big themes. One is the winter and the snow and the cold and the dark, and the other is Christmas. And of course, you know, I think about, Charles Dickens and Christmas stories in general, and especially in the last few years of like the Doctor Who Christmas specials. And can I ask you what the balance is between the kind of Christmas story aspects and the winter story aspects? Because obviously they play together with each other, but they're two very distinctly different kind of tales.
I think the we do have a few Christmas trees in the story. You will see Christmas trees. I think more than specifically Christmas, I think we really kind of leaned into the sense of family and the sense of sort of coming home.
Sure.
And you know, dealing with that sensibility of there's the comfort of being with family and being home. But right now there's also that, you know, that you can't go anywhere else except home. Yeah. So I think we sort of tried to layer both of those things into the story. That there's yes, these characters are a family. The Teen Titans are a family. The Justice League ultimately is even a family. Black Lightning appears in the story and we see his family. But there's also the sense of isolation that you get in winter, and very much this time of year, this year, this godforsaken year that we're all living through, where there is that sense of isolation and the fact that you can't go out and be with the people that you want to be with. So, you know, we're not, none of that stuff is too terribly heavy-handed, but we wanted the story to acknowledge some of that reality that we're all feeling.
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword of Christmas, because if you think about it, is Christmas is actually also a time when suicide rates go up, you know, because people feel alone, feel that they're missing out, and there is a sort of like long dark road ahead that can become, you know, quite daunting at times. And so I think the word despair comes into this, and it's one of the motivating aspects of the villain of the piece, who ultimately is a very complicated chap. It was like, and like Ron said, it's not really heavy handed, but we just thought that it's always good to have a nice theme to build on, because it really can help inform choices that your characters make and the shape the story takes, you know, if you're sticking to a theme, it always guides you back. You know, it's a touchstone along the way.
So then
also the other thing I, you know, really like about, you know, the notion of something like this is there has to be winter, because without winter you don't get spring. So it's natural. You know what I mean? It's like
characters need to go through those falls and those dark times in order to rise from them, right? Yeah. Like that's why we find characters compelling, is because they go through the darkness, right?
Everybody's got a struggle. And I think it's a struggle for all of the heroes that we have in the story. And it's also a struggle for the villain. The villain is, as Andy said, hopefully a little bit more multidimensional than your standard cardboard cutout villain. Part of how the story is arranged is that a chunk of the story takes place in the 10th century in every issue.
Cool.
So every issue has a flashback to a story taking place in the 10th century with what we've ended up calling the Justice League Viking. The Justice League Viking,
the JLV.
So the Justice League Viking is Hippolyta, Black Adam.
Oh, you're telling us! Awesome, I'm so excited.
Viking Prince.
That's
and
it.
Yeah.
Viking Prince, awesome. Some
that's stuff. One. There we go. That's the JLV right there, front and center.
Every issue takes place in two different time streams. There's a larger chunk of the story that takes place in the here and now with the Justice League, and there's the story in the past, which really informs everything that comes after. The past The past doesn't stay buried in a very literal sense. Well, the past doesn't stay buried.
Yeah.
And hopefully what you see as well is again, another one of the themes, which again, we don't use, like, my God, we're multi-thematic. Look at that. get up on our fancy writer ways. wanted to draw
almost like we're you guys are evolving as writers and we're evolving as readers.
Well, we keep saying to ourselves at various points along the way, it's almost like we knew what we were doing.
Yeah.
but we wanted to draw a distinction between the JLV and the JLA, in so much as the 10th century version of these guys are warriors. They're very much, the heroes of their time. And that's a stark contrast to the way that the heroes operate now. And it's you know, we said this is this thing. It's like the, you know, solving a problem with an axe and a sword versus trying to solve a problem. the warrior stroke guardian mentality, you know.
The closed fist versus the open hand in some ways. So, the Marco Santucci is the artist doing all of the flashback stuff. So the flashbacks are all consistent. And we tried to arrange it so that if you took out all of the flashback pages from every issue, it would form one cohesive story. So, we tried to juggle all of this stuff in the process. And I think now that, like, the pages are streaming into our inboxes at an alarming rate right now. And everything looks just terrific. We've got terrific art teams lined up on all of this stuff. And it's, you know, to me, that's still the best part of this gig, is when you see the stuff that was in your head now made real on the page.
I'm sorry, Mike. It sounds like you were about to say something.
Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to ask about, because we've kind of been segueing to this. You've got this new, all new major DC villain that you're kind of setting up both in the past and in the present, which is an awesome concept. And I'm really excited to see who that person is. So I'm not asking for spoilers here, but I am interested in you guys talking about the challenge and the fun, the potential of adding in this new major villain into the DC universe, both in the past and in the present.
And is it Maxwell Lord?
It is not Maxwell Lord. Nobody's going to shoot him in the head.
I was going to say, Ron, you know when we were congratulating ourselves on how clever we were? God damn it. We're gonna have to rewrite.
It's not Maxwell Lord.
One of the cool things about being able to just create the villain from scratch is that we weren't tied to anything,
right?
And I think it's appropriate to say that he doesn't really see himself as a villain, which I think is how most of the really great villains operate. They operate on a level where they see themselves as the heroes of their own stories. And he very much does. He feels he's been wronged, and he unleashes what he can do.
And in fact, that was, you know, when we were looking at the root mythology for this, is the Norse myth of Fimbulwinter, which is the endless winter. And the endless winter is three or five years consecutive winters with no break that actually herald Ragnarok. So to some extent, what we're dealing with there is that mythology and how this character gets caught up in that mythology.
And also kind of as part of a natural process almost.
Yeah, well, I guess it's so. If we want to get historical about it, it was around the 400 BC. There was a huge climactic shift that heralded some really bad winters in that Nordic region.
Right.
Which I guess at that time had them all running around going, it's the end of the bloody world, you know, it's like, or you know, as the classic joke has it, you know, Dad, am I a polar bear? Of course you are, son. Why do you ask? He goes, because I'm fucking freezing my nuts off. Which, again, you know, we need to write that joke into the story.
Hey, we actually have a viewer asking us a question. Tommy Berta, hey Tommy, on YouTube is asking, does Batman beat the Viking Justice League Viking when he goes? What's the Viking Prince, Tommy? When he goes back in time? Does, I don't know if we can give that away without giving that being a spoiler. Can you guys say anything about that?
Okay, so there's no time travel.
There's no time travel because we're not stupid.
What are you saying about the most recent Marvel Avengers movie there, Mr. Mars?
It's just opens, like every time you do time travel, it opens a can of worms that is tough to close. So generally, your clever, intelligent writers will go, yeah, I'm not doing time travel.
Yeah. Yeah. My first pitch on this was, I've got a great time travel idea. and we were very aware that there is a Viking Batman. It was just juggling the needs of the story versus the books that we're playing in at this moment, just sort of like move characters in and characters out. But we're kind of hopeful that, you know, people like the JLV, and maybe there's some more stories to be told there.
I think the idea of not making a time travel story, but making the JLV story self-contained is really going to help you on that aspect, honestly.
Oh, yeah. I like the notion that every age has got its own version of the Justice League, because there's every age there's you know, a need for all of the heroes of that time to get together to defeat something.
And it also consolidates this really, really rich DC history, because, you know, there are all these comics that were disconnected at one point, you know, all these Western stories, Viking stories, knight stories, etc., and even Neanderthal or caveman stories. And by taking them all and pulling them together into a consistent continuity, while that certainly presents challenges, I think it offers a lot more opportunities, including the idea of a JLA for every age.
Yeah.
Hey, just getting ready to wrap up. Just, I think Christopher had a question before we finish up. Chris.
Actually, I had a couple. If that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. First of all, I one of the great pleasures of just seeing the solicitation for this was seeing two writers that I have a lot of love and respect for your work, writing a lot of characters that we don't typically associate with you guys. And I was just curious if on some of these new characters for you, did that like scratch an itch? Like, I've always wanted to write blank and now I finally got the chance to do it. And secondly, as a guy that, oh man, I, you know, going back to Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern and Resurrection Man, great fan of your past and your present work. And I was just wondering if there are any future projects you could talk about. So, and there you go. There's my two.
Let's see. I'm my sincere condolences for being a Dolphins fan. I just don't.
That's why I love this picture, is because you have visible proof there that I have horrible taste in football, and I look like I'm that age demographic that I'm going to walk up to you and give you crap about Hal Jordan. And yet there you go, still being great to me as a fan with two strikes against me.
All right. So the first one, I think I've always wanted to write Titans. I was a huge Teen Titans fan growing up, the Wolfman Perez stuff. So that was a cool itch to scratch. I think the other one that was, I've written Superman before, and to me that's always, you know, top of the list kind of treat. I think the other one for me that was really, that was more fun than I even expected it to be was Aquaman, because it's such, I've written the character obviously, but I've never written an issue of Aquaman. And this one is, you know, it's, look, it's got giant seahorses in it, man. What more do you want? It's very much a part of this story, and Aquaman obviously plays a huge role in the whole thing. It's very much has its own flavor. It, you know, a chunk of the story, a good chunk of the story takes place in Atlantis, and it has a setting that no other issue has. It has a relationship between Aquaman and Mera that is really not quite like any other relationship in the DCU or even this series. So I had a ball with all of it, but those are the ones that kind of stand out for me.
Yeah, and echoing what Ron said, because it's like I was racking my brains as to, you know, I've written a run of Aquaman. I've written some Justice League specials. I haven't done the Flash, so that was fun. And then on the other ones, like Titans, either I've written them or I've worked on the art on it because of inking stuff. So doing the Flash issue was great, and we got some wonderful Clayton Henry artwork on that as well, which is just beautiful.
That one is actually all that the Flash issue is complete and in the can.
And looking great. But I think, you know, the Aquaman was a pleasant surprise, just because it was like we just had a great fun with that. The Titans one, particularly working with the current Titans theme, which obviously we had no connection with whatsoever, because when I did it was like back in the 90s, I guess. But so working with that iteration, which has also got the classic Titans back in it, was great, because it was a twofer. You know, you had brand new and bringing in some of the old stuff. And the Justice League Dark one, like I say, I am such a fan of that book. It's always good to work on something that, you know, I've actually just enjoyed reading that stuff. So to get to write something that adds a little bit to their ongoing continuity was really good.
And that Justice League Dark issue, as we're getting the pages, looks absolutely stunning. Yeah. Everything looks amazing, but we got to play with some real big imagery in the Justice League Dark issue, and the Amon Kay, the artist, is just knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, gorgeous Carl Holtz cover too.
Hey, speaking of artists, I think Jacob had a comment about that.
Indeed. As an artist, I want to thank you both for creating a series of titles where the artists can have just white backgrounds. You won't believe how many times we fret over the backgrounds. You're like, our writers could say, "I want these wonderful, huge images of all, and put in all these characters." And what would you like for the background? What would you like for the background? Yeah. I don't care.
You know, just draw Gotham City. Like, you know, okay, City State.
We did joke about, do you remember, Ron, the classic Alpha Flight issue, the John Byrne Alpha Flight issue? Yeah,
just the storm.
I love that issue.
You know, we've talked about that, and, you know, talked about, no backgrounds. It's just a big whiteout. It's a storm. And virtually every artist is, you know, like filling up the background, like Howard Porter's drawing the first
bookend.
And obviously Howard has an amazing Justice League pedigree. Howard's somebody I've known for, you know, probably more than 25 years. And this is actually the first time we've worked together. So I'm just thrilled to be working with him. And, you know, a lot of the first issue takes place in an Arctic landscape. And, you know, I kind of had a chat with Howard and said, "Oh, you know, look, you draw a horizon line and it's snow, and, you know," and of course we get the pages back and, you know, it's snow and jagged ice and everything is drawn out, like, you know, so he made it as difficult and as time consuming for himself as possible. There's no just, you know, draw a horizon line and, you know, the sky is blue and the ground is white. There's none of that.
His very first, I don't want to say his very first, but the first JLA story arc took place a large part in the Arctic with an alien base. But, like, yeah, you're really revisiting, coming back to some of the great haunts. And that's so exciting.
It is. Everybody's just, we are absolutely riding the coattails of our artists, because everybody's, Everybody's looking great. We just started to get pages from Brandon Peterson today on the Black Adam special. And obviously, Brandon's somebody that I worked with extensively at CrossGen years ago. And to be, you know, kind of paired up again on another issue was just absolutely, absolutely fun.
Well, this looks gorgeous. I can't wait to look at it. I can't wait to read it. It's just, it looks like an amazing collaboration.
Well, it looks like the first issue comes out just 2 months from today on December 1st. The first JLA special should be out. Yeah, Ron and Andy, any future projects we want to talk about before we wrap up?
I've got two things coming out from Heavy Metal, which we haven't sort of, some word of it has leaked out. One's going to be in the magazine, one's going to be its a separate series. So I should probably keep mum on the titles, but pay attention to Heavy Metal. There's an Aftershock miniseries. And I don't know, other various and sundry stuff that dictates that I could not leave my house even if we were allowed to.
Fair enough. Andy, anything else you'd like to touch on before we wrap it up?
Comic-wise, nothing that's been confirmed that I could announce. I want to do some more stuff. Ron and I have got some more ideas about bits and bobs, but I'm also just starting writing the world and character history to a new computer game that's coming out as well, which again hasn't been announced yet, but when it does, that's good fun, because that scratches another itch, which is just giant world building where you just create, it's like, here, create the universe, all the characters, and then give it to the guys and they create levels out of all of that, which is again interesting and fun stuff.
All right, cool. We'll look out for that as well. Ron, always a pleasure having you on. Thanks for coming on, sir.
No problem, Mike. Always always a pleasure, and let's be real. None of us can go anywhere anyway, so.
You can come on more.
We got nothing to do.
Fair enough. Paul, Jacob, Chris, thanks for co-hosting. Appreciate it, guys.
Hey, thanks for letting me in.
Absolutely.
And to all of our viewers and listeners out there, we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.